Now, a CDC advisory group voted last week to recommend the COVID-19 vaccine be added to the immunization schedules for children and adults. The move does not mean that schools will require the vaccination, though some misinformation to that effect has circulated on social media and elsewhere. Some states and schools do use the vaccine schedules to set their guidelines for students, but those decisions are made at the state or local levels. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the recommended vaccine schedules? Have you run into misinformation, or do you have questions to see if something is true or not? Would you like to see Wisconsin require the COVID-19 vaccine in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Jonathan Tempty is the Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He served on the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. That's the panel that voted last week to add the COVID-19 vaccine to the immunization schedules. Dr. Tempty, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you very much, Rob. It's always a pleasure to join you.
Can you talk about these vaccine schedules? What are they? How do they work?
Absolutely. The vaccine schedules are created by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. They're reviewed and endorsed by CDC, but these set the roadmap for the complicated vaccine schedules that we have and provide clinicians like myself, people in pharmacies, and so on, the appropriate information as to what vaccines to give at what age. More importantly, these are not only endorsed by CDC, but there is buy-in by the other groups out there that take care of patients in the country. So for example, the childhood schedule, this is one that goes from birth through age 18, is agreed upon by the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and the CDC. On the other hand, the adult schedule that takes care of everybody else is agreed upon by the family physicians, the American College of Physicians, that's the internal medicine docs, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and the Nurse Midwife Association. So these are not only put together by CDC, but they're also broadly supported by all the immunizing communities out there.
There's been a lot of concern, I think, or confusion maybe about the link between the CDC putting this on the schedule and schools requiring the vaccines that are on that schedule. What are the steps in between those two things?
Well, there are a lot of steps, and it's usually a pretty complicated and complex procedure. The schedules themselves provide us the roadmap of what we should be doing in terms of providing people with the best evidence-based preventive care we can. But it's up to the states to determine whether or not any particular vaccine should be mandated. And let me take a step back that for adults, we really don't have any mandates at all, with the exception for people who are in healthcare settings. Their healthcare system can require immunization, for example, influenza or COVID-19. On the other hand, children, because they are located within areas with high transmissibility, you know, congregated in schools, states have taken on the purview to, from time to time, mandate a vaccine for the safety of the school community.
Here in Wisconsin, can you talk about the process for requiring this particular vaccine, say, and not that other one? For example, I think the CDC guidelines recommend a flu vaccine. Last I checked, I don't think that's required, for example, for schools.
Yeah, I don't know of anywhere in the country that has a requirement for children to get influenza vaccine. But in the state of Wisconsin, it's a straightforward process, but usually takes a long time. It's something that is done on an executive branch level. So, you know, the governor's office and the secretary of the Department of Health Services will formulate the rules. And then it has to go to the legislature for approval. These things usually will take anywhere from 1, 2, 3, or 4 years to go through. And because it's proposed doesn't mean that it's going to happen. There's a lot of steps in there. So the rules that we do have, or the mandates, have been well thought out and exist for the benefit of all.
We are talking to Dr. Jonathan Tempty from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at vaccines for kids and adults, looking at new CDC recommendations for COVID-19 vaccines in particular. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. So Dr. Tempty, let's get into what exactly is the CDC recommending. Let's start with kids. What are they suggesting and when?
This is where it gets really difficult, because currently we have, for children, 3 different vaccines that can be used for COVID-19. We have the Pfizer, BioNTech, the Moderna, and the Novavax vaccines. And when I do teaching on this, I now have a table that has 10 different cells, depending on the vaccine and the age range, as to what you can do. But in general, what the recommended vaccine table will provide is the guidance for providing COVID-19 primary vaccine and boosters at the appropriate ages. But again, this really depends on how old you are. And you have to go not off the table, but to the footnotes in the table to get the nuances of exactly when, how many doses, and how long you have to wait to provide a booster dose. So it gets fairly complicated and far more detail than we want to put on the air right now.
Fair enough. Now, for that doctor who's working with parents, say on a well child visit, does this change much? We already have these vaccines available and some guidelines on how to use them. Does this additional recommendation now from the CDC advisory committee change how a doctor would talk to parents about these vaccines?
I don't think it changes very much in terms of what the doctor or other care provider mentions about vaccines. But I have to say that there's one really profound effect that having this on the tables has. And as we all know, all of us who have received a COVID-19 vaccine so far have gone into University Health Service for me, or to Walgreens for my last booster, or to your clinician office. And none of us have had to pay anything for the vaccines. This is likely to change in the very near future. The federal government will no longer be footing the bill for vaccines, and these can be expensive. I've seen reports of the Pfizer vaccine going to be coming out probably at $130 a dose. So when a vaccine goes onto the table, and there's something else called a vaccine for children resolution. When these things are enacted, all of a sudden it requires the insurance industry to pay for the vaccine. If there's a vaccine that is routinely recommended and on the recommended vaccine schedule, then there's a mandate that the vaccine is paid for. And the reason this is really profound is, number one, not everybody can afford vaccines. We live in a country where there is a great range of incomes, and there will be people who would have to decide whether or not they would pay for a vaccine or to get food, buy gas for the car. So this is really, really important in terms of assurance that everybody has equal access to these vaccines.
Now, how about the CDC recommendations for us grownups? Anything change in these new guidelines from the CDC?
Well, simply by going onto the table, it also requires the vaccine to be covered under the Affordable Care Act on what we call a first dollar coverage. That means you don't have a deductible. It means you don't have any copay. So as long as it's on the recommended vaccine schedule, we also have an ability for this vaccine to be covered.
We're talking to Dr. Jonathan Tempty, Associate Dean of Public Health at the UW School of Medicine, about the COVID-19 vaccine being recommended on the immunization schedules for children and adults. This unanimous vote from an advisory board for the CDC. We're talking about what that does and what it doesn't mean for who gets vaccinated, for requirements at schools, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As we mentioned, this doesn't mean that schools are requiring COVID-19 vaccinations. Would you like them to, or would you like them to stay, in effect, voluntary for kids? Do you have questions about the state of the art, what we know about vaccines, the new booster for particular variants of COVID-19? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Dr. Jonathan Tempty, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, with us today to catch up on the latest COVID-19 vaccine news, including a CDC advisory group recommending the vaccine for the standard immunization schedule. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about what that means? Have you run into claims in the media or social media? You're wondering if they are legit or not. Do you have questions more generally about what we know about vaccines now, what the current recommendations are? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Sandra is with us in Northern Illinois. Sandra, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Sandra?
Just a little bit of confusion. I'm literally scheduled to get my Pfizer booster tomorrow. And I just spoke to a cousin who's scheduled to get the Moderna tomorrow. He said he has read the Moderna booster will cover the variant that is now happening in Europe that is beginning to show up here, but he hasn't heard anything about whether the Pfizer booster will. So I'm confused about which booster I should get.
Sandra, thanks for the call. If Sandra's confused, I imagine other people are too. Dr. Tempty, what do we know about the current boosters and what they're going to cover especially well?
Well, Sandra, the confusion is really widespread just because this has been such a dynamic and rapidly changing world out there. But both of the boosters that are approved now by FDA and are recommended by CDC are what we call bivalent boosters. They contain elements of the very original strain and elements of the BA4, BA5. So these should be reasonable vaccines to get at this time. The BA4, BA5 are both Omicron variants. And because of that, we get a broader immune response than from the original vaccine. So you should be fine with either Moderna or Pfizer.
Sandra, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Dr. Tempty, for that person who has had, you know, the original round and maybe the first boosters out there, can you talk a little bit about this new variant booster and the difference it can make given, as you said, this changing viral landscape?
Well, it's very interesting because as we have seen this virus evolve and change, we're not only seeing a different realm or a different spectrum of symptoms, but we're also seeing different spectrum in terms of, you know, things like case fatality rates, how many people are dying of this, what's the likelihood of hospitalization. But I think as time goes on, the vaccines have to adapt to what the variants we are encountering are at this point in time. And so with the mRNA technology, this allows a pretty rapid response, but it requires ongoing surveillance, not only here in Wisconsin, United States, but across the world, not only to see what we have, but to see what's emerging. And this will be a changing environment, I would say, you know, at least for the coming months to coming years. And the vaccine we have for a booster a year from now is probably going to be different from what we have now, but we just don't quite know where we're going to be.
Thanks again for that call, Sandra, at 800-642-1234. Dr. Tempty, I think in a lot of people's minds, COVID is on the back burner in some ways, and in part because there's some good news. The rates of people getting it are down. The death rate is down, but it's not gone. When you look at the charts, you know, we've been hovering at about 400 plus or minus deaths per day in the United States. That is definitely not nothing. How much concern do you have right now?
Well, in each of those 400 deaths per day represent, you know, multiply by 4 or 5 or 10 the number of people who are being really closely and personally affected. And then you have to think in terms of the resources behind for every death. There are numerous people who are hospitalized that are in ICU. You have all the caregivers, all the people who are, you know, putting in extra hours to care for these people in hospital, in nursing homes, and so on. So the toll is just immense, both in terms of the economic cost, but in the sheer human cost. So yes, this is far from over. And this is still continuing to be much more intense than your typical influenza outbreak. I think if you've been following the news over the last couple of weeks, we are also seeing influenza starting to come back, particularly in the southern states, and it will move up to Wisconsin. We're also seeing a lot of respiratory syncytial virus. This is one that really plays havoc with young children and older people. And we're seeing both influenza and RSV coming aboard much earlier than we typically do in a typical year. So I think the concern is if we're already having hospitals somewhat occupied by COVID, and then you start throwing on top these other respiratory infections, we could be dealing with a lot of just congestion in the hospitals, a lot of services that we just can't provide. So I think we have to be very, very careful. And that's my plug right now, to remind people to get their influenza vaccine if you haven't, get it as soon as possible.
Let's bring on another caller at 800-642-1234. Lenny is with us in Lake Geneva. Lenny, hi.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
What did you want to ask about, Lenny?
You know, I was vaccinated originally over a year ago, a couple of times. I haven't had any boosters. I'm 60 years old. I'm really healthy. However, I found out that I have atrial fibrillation, which is a heart condition. Been ablated twice. I'm in good shape now, but some of these vaccines, it seems as though there's been some heart issues that have dropped out of them. And I'm wondering if this vaccine is safe.
Lenny, talk about that. Thanks, Dr. Tempty.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. What we have found is at a low level, the mRNA vaccines, so the Moderna and the Pfizer, can be associated with what we call myocarditis or perimyocardial. Pericarditis. This is inflammation of the heart tissue. The good news in two ways is, number one, it's very rare. Number two, it's largely hit young males, so adolescent and males in their 20s. By the time you get into your 50s and 60s, this phenomenon pretty much has disappeared. It also has not really appeared in individuals younger than about 12 years old. So for your case, I wouldn't be particularly concerned in terms of the atrial fibrillation and issues along that line.
Thanks a lot for that call, Lenny. And Dr. Tempty, that myocarditis risk you mentioned, especially for younger men, we also must have to, I think, compare that to the risk of myocarditis that you get from having COVID itself, right?
Absolutely. And again, one has to be careful because the information is constantly changing. And what we know from the original strain, the pre-Delta, the Delta, the Omicron, the information keeps on changing. And researchers, people who are out there doing epidemiology, are constantly trying to keep up with this. But the bottom line is that the myocarditis we're seeing, you know, per immunization provided, is far less of a risk than the myocarditis per case of COVID acquired by an individual. So I think in terms of the risk benefit, the vaccines truly are very, very beneficial.
I wanted to ask, you mentioned the risk of flu and the need for flu vaccine. I think a common question people have is, can I get the flu vaccine as at the same time as a COVID initial vaccine or booster? I assume that's okay because I call it flustered. I got my flu vaccine and the Omicron booster at the same time. That's cool, right?
Yeah, that should be fine. Actually, this has been studied in the past. And we find that when both influenza vaccine and the COVID vaccine are provided together, both are immunogenic, meaning you get immunity from both of them, and it doesn't increase the level of side effects that you get above either of the vaccines.
And you mentioned earlier the, I think it was the Novavax vaccine. If I have this right, that's not an mRNA one like Pfizer or Moderna is. Is there a case where I'd want to say I want the mRNA versus the other kind?
Well, I think at this point in time, the Novavax, you know, provides an opportunity for people who wish to avoid the mRNA. The current Novavax vaccine is built off the original virus. And so we don't have yet a booster for the Novavax. However, CDC says that if you have received your initial two doses of Novavax, you can get a booster with the Pfizer vaccine following that.
Dr. Tempty, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and hopefully everybody remembers to get their flu vaccine as well.
That's Dr. Jonathan Tempty, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He's with us today to check in on the latest COVID-19 vaccine news, with the CDC advisory group recommending it be added to immunization schedules for children and for adults.